I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to episode 107 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. We are coming to you after a Thursday afternoon game, and I don't know if we have to go sort of full vibe check on this, but it was a little bit of an eventful game, it being 4-0, but also you had a Bassett, a really strong Bassett start, you had an Alejandro Kirk looking alive thing, you had a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, kind of opposite field rocket home run, the likes of which we haven't seen in a minute. So I'd want to linger a little bit on this game. What stood out to you about the matinee here?
Yeah, I think that the Bassett performance in the bullpen holding it was really nice, because it could have gone such a different way, and it just felt like they were ready to blow the doors off Blake Snell all afternoon and couldn't do it, and couldn't get the runners in scoring position hits. And that was sort of the driving the conversation on the internet, for sure, and I'm sure in, you know, anywhere else where people were watching the game, because it was just one of those things that reminded you so much of what went wrong and what was frustrating about the first half. It's because it was like an outsized version of it, I think, for a while. Like they kept getting Snell walked like six or seven guys, I think, or something like that. He had an absurd number of walks, and they just couldn't capitalize. And it felt the dread. Because it seemed like it was a game that they absolutely should win and were going to find a way not to, but managed to hang on. And then, yeah, Kirk and Vladdy really pushing the runs. Insurance runs have sort of been a little more frequent, I think, of late, and that has also been a really good story for them, because there were times where that didn't happen. And I think in the first half we saw a lot of stressful innings from the bullpen that you could use dialing that back a little bit. So good all around, and nice to see them, you know, finish on a winning note, even though the Padres series didn't go the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, I think that, as you mentioned, there was that sense of dread building throughout the game of all these opportunities missed. And it feels like there's so many games where a team takes, I don't know, a one-run lead, a two-run lead, but they really should have had a five-run lead. And then next thing you know, one home run in the eighth inning, and it's a whole new game, even if you've dominated the game the whole time. And it just felt a little bit like it was going to be one of those days, especially given how this San Diego Padres series has gone. But yeah, there's just a few individual performances, like Bassett. The momentum had kind of gone for him after a couple of rough outings, but if you kind of look at it now, it's sort of four good starts in a row. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's four or five, something like that. But he's got a real run going here. He's kind of bringing that ERA potentially under four again in the near future. And, you know, he's throwing a lot of, we talked to this before, I don't love to go super deep on the nuts and bolts of Bassett, because it's just so unpredictable. Like, you just don't know what he's going to do start to start. Has been a little bit more sinker heavy lately, a little bit more of hard stuff, but I don't want to claim to know that that's the thing that made it work for him. But it's good for the Blue Jays when he's pitching well, when he's hit pitching like a middle of the rotation starter. Kirk is the one that stood out to me. I wrote a little bit on it, just a little blurb basically, but he had a 15 game stretch where he didn't have a single walk or extra base hit. Like, that's not good. That's really rough, especially the the walk thing for him because that's such a constant. Like there are his power ebbs and flows. It mainly does the worst one of those. But it tends to disappear and appear, whereas the walks are always there and they kind of provide that floor for him. When he's not doing that, he can be really ugly offensively. So this was the best performance from him we've seen in a long, long time. Like we're talking months, weeks. So that was the biggest takeaway from the game for me, was that Kirk showed the type of performance we haven't seen from him in a long time. We'll see where that goes, but they've been waiting for one like this from him.
Yeah, no, they absolutely have. I think Caleb Joseph after the game had some good stuff on just the way he rotated, and I think he was looking at the Kirk keeping his back or having his back foot up as he swung through the ball that left the yard, which he thought was good, and pointed to the right things mechanically happening in terms of his hip rotation, which that sent off a little flare for me, because we know that Kirk has had that. He was on the 60 day a couple years ago with the hip thing, and maybe that there's lingering issues of that can crop up, or who knows. He is a big guy doing a lot of squatting. You wonder sometimes about any of these guys being injured or hiding things. We saw Bo Bichette was shaking off his hand there today. That was commented on a couple times, and his production has kind of dipped lately, which he wrote about a little bit this week, which maybe there's something to that as well. But yeah, I think Kirk absolutely was a standout. Vlad, as we've seen with Vlad, and we can take this away with Kirk as well, is that you can you can show up once, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be consistently back to the level that we expected. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and the level for Vlad, the expectations are so high that one home run doesn't feel particularly meaningful. Whereas with Kirk, his power expectations are low enough that every time he hits home run, you kind of go like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a thing that he does. That's a good reminder he's capable of that. And I thought it was a good point you mentioned in terms of that mechanical breakdown with Kirk, because he really had struggled to pull the ball, and that's not necessarily his game, but when he hits for power, it is a little bit, and it had just been so much stuff going the other way, him trying to dump things into right field, and so to see him rotate and turn on a ball was definitely an encouraging sign, because there has not been a lot. He's not been channeling the Danny Jansen energy, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And he could use, much like much of the team could use a little bit more Danny Jansen energy. Kirk certainly could.
Yeah. But also a lot of them.
I didn't want to necessarily lead with Manoah because everything is Manoah, so we had that little preamble there, but we do have to go to Manoah here, because it seems like every start that he makes is, it's significant on this weird journey that he's on, this bizarre 2023 season. And the last time we talked, I think we were both relatively cautious in any optimism we had concerning what he did against the Detroit Tigers. And lo and behold, he came out and he had a rough one. And there were some tough breaks. The umpiring was bizarre. The fielding wasn't always perfect. But the reason it seems like Manoah struggled in the first place is because his stuff was diminished and he's come back from the minor leagues. And we said, in that first start, he did well, but was the stuff better? It didn't really seem to be. And, this seemed to be what happened when a good lineup, or at least a very talented lineup, gets a hold of that stuff that is not impressive right now.
Yeah, and like you say, and everyone on the Blue Jays was very quick to point out, because some umpiring funniness, absolutely. But I'm with you. Yeah, awful would be wrong. It was maybe a strong word, but just could not get swing and miss. Didn't get called strikes. Guys were fouling balls off. The stuff just was absolutely not there. And even though a couple innings went a little longer than they should have. Sometimes that's to do with the call, but also you got to make a pitch to put a guy away, and he could not do that. I think it was like 16 called and swinging strikes combined, which is in 92 pitches is I think maybe 15, I think it was 16%. And that is just way on the low end of the scale of that statistic that doesn't necessarily, I think, correlate to ERA, but is a pretty good indicator of a pitcher's stuff and how he is and how well he is doing. And not perfect, because, you know, there are guys, and Manoah can be a guy who doesn't need to rely on strikeouts. That wasn't the case coming out of the minors and in 2021. And I kind of would like him to go back to being more of a strikeout guy. I think I'd sacrifice some efficiency for a little more swing and miss that we used to see from him. But, you know, he saw the success he had last year, and I guess this is the kind of thing that they're trying to do. And yeah, you know, you look at the under the hood stuff, you look at where the horizontal break was on the slider, something everybody's kind of keeping their eyes on, and it was not good. The velocity, you know, part of what was going on with his trip to the minors was supposed to be getting the velocity back up. That wasn't there. It was, you know, for and he only lasted three innings. And yeah, some of that's the umpire, but it was pretty close to awful, I would say.
Yeah, and you know, even when he seemed to hit the spots that he kind of wanted to hit, especially the slider, right? Like the fastball, I think there's a bit of a ceiling on what his fastball can be, just because he's not a massive velocity guy. Like, you know, even at his highest level of velocity, he's not someone who is one of the hardest throwers in baseball. But the slider is special, or at least it has been special. And there's moments where he's throwing it, you know, where you want it to be, like just off the plate, off the edge, a little bit low, a little bit outside. And guys are just looking at it. Like it was not a pretty sight. And, you know, we have seen this has been a roller coaster. Like every time you feel like you've got this pinned down, other than, you know, broadly speaking, it's not great. But like, you know, we had that weird start against all the, you know, the rookie league Yankees, and that was the biggest disaster we've seen. And, you know, Al copped to overreacting to that based on what happened next. And then he went to Double A and it was great. And then his first MLB starts great. And then we see this. So I'm reluctant to say, oh, here's where we're going next, because so far it's been pretty unpredictable. But it seems safe to say that as far as the quality of his repertoire, it just isn't biting right now. And it's a little surprising to see him back in the major leagues under those circumstances. Like, I kind of figured that the whole point of sending him to the pitch lab and all that jazz was to make sure that his stuff was there. And it almost, the way it's played out, it's almost like the Blue Jays kind of tried to make sure that he could throw strikes again. But throwing strikes isn't enough based on what he's using right now.
No, that's true. And then he wasn't really throwing strikes against the Padres. Or, you know, the slider strike percentage in particular went way, way down. And like you said, yeah, the guys were looking at the slider, even though it looked like the location was good. I think Joe Siddle on the broadcast mentioned, you know, you weren't seeing the uncomfortable swings. Like, guys were not in between and not knowing what was coming at them. It was a good lineup, but it was just stuff that wasn't fooling anybody. It has been a roller coaster. I'm cautious to be too down on it, but it definitely did not make me feel good about the progress they keep saying that he's made, and they seem to really be holding up and be underpinning the reason that he is back in the big leagues. Nor does it make me feel great about how many more kicks in the can he's going to get before something else is going to have to happen drastically. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the columns that came out of that start, it wasn't just, oh, Manoah had a bad night. It was like, Manoah had a bad night, and this changes where the Blue Jays are going to be at the trade deadline. And mm-hmm. based on what he's throwing, I'm not even saying that that's an unfair column to write or that's an exaggeration in any way, but it is, you know, we're getting down to it here. We're getting pretty close to the trade deadline. And in a world where Manoah is even a trustworthy four or five, you could tell yourself, you don't really need to add a starter. And then in a world where Manoah can't be trusted at all, and your top three guys are Gausman and then, you know, Bassett and Berríos in some order, and you're looking at a possible, you know, Kikuchi playoff start if you make it to one of those long series, now you're telling yourself, we probably do need a starting pitcher. So it is, you know, I guess there's a world where Ryu comes back, but he's not going to come back in time to tell the Blue Jays what they would need to know about his reliability. Like, they can't, going to the deadline, they can't treat Ryu as someone who is going to help him, even if he potentially does. And I did want to get into, we have some Ross Atkins talking about the trade deadline here. And, you know, as per usual, I think it's fair to say the words themselves are not necessarily the most illuminating. So we're going to do what we can to pick them apart and see what's actually there. So, Stone, I'm going to read you some quotes and we'll go through what if there's more meaning, perhaps, than what is on the page.
Sure.
I think this is from Shai Davidi's piece, but I think there was a lot of, I think everyone was there.
Oh, there's overlap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I in fact have a piece that might be out before this podcast about,
there you go.
I just go through a fine tooth comb with this. So I just
wanted to credit. I didn't want to be, you know, too much of the aggregator parasite type, although, fair. Whatever happens. Okay. So the first one is very basic. Like, we're better suited for a right-handed bat, but open to any way that we can make our team better. The thing that's just funny with that quote is just, you have to slap the second part onto basically everything you say, because, you know, in theory you could do something else, and you want to keep yourself open to things. And it, of course, like, if you're a general manager, your job is to make the team better. But it's clear that they see what everyone else sees, and, you know, they're not idiots, that this team would be a more potent offense if they had more reliable options offensively against left-handed pitching. And so the right-hand bat, if you look at one thing that they need the most, like, personally, I believe, like, that is the most obvious, unless you're a real Jordan Luplo believer, but that seems like the most obvious thing that they can go get. And it's not necessarily that hard to get, potentially.
I think so. I think, but I think, I wonder if that's also an admission that, you know, the guys from the left side aren't getting the job done. One in particular, you know, Varsho has been just brutal since mid-June. And you know, and this is part of what I'm writing about. Like, he's on pace for like 2.5 WAR by Baseball Reference, but like 1.1 by Fangraphs, and you know, that's quite a variance, and it makes it difficult to, you know, if you believe in the one number, it makes it hard to you know, replace a guy like that. That the price to pay to get a better guy than that is going to be pretty high, because, you know, his defense and his base running have been excellent. It's just his production of the plate that's been so bad. But on the other, you know, if you believe in the other number, then, you know, that's a guy who can be replaced. You can do better. And also, you know, how much do you believe in, you know, even going back to like what you're saying with Ryu and with looking at Manoah, like, what, you know, you're kind of getting down to it, and he is lost right now. And he is just, I think, in this particular month, I think he has he's like 5 for 40 with one walk and like no extra base hits. So it's been bad, and I think that would be, you know, they kind of have to swallow their pride, but also maybe, you know, they're not going to get that many more opportunities with its core, really, where they're in as good a position as this, unless they, you know, unless some guys from the minors come up and you know, really help change the trajectory, you know, Bo and Vlad are, or unless those extensions happen, which can obviously change things, and I'm not being super down about that, but those extensions don't exist right now. And you know, I wonder if they would be more aggressive in that sense, and maybe that, you know, going back to the quote from Atkins, is that maybe he's suggesting, it's not just the right-handed bat that they would look at. I mean, yes, they do have to tack that onto everything, and yes, I think the right-handed thing is an issue, though, you know, Vlad has been, you know, not Vlad, you know, in a lot of ways, obviously, this year, but like I tweeted about this earlier today, like his ISO against lefties is pathetic. Like I think he has two extra base hits against lefties all year. So that could certainly, there are ways to get more power, you know, from internal options is what I'm saying, and do better against left-handed pitchers, you know, than this, which may negate some of that, you know, stronger need for the right-handed bat, though. I would agree that's probably where they want to go. But just offense in general would be real nice a lot of days.
Yeah, and you know, the Vladdy thing, you're right, those numbers are brutal and you expect them to be better. They almost certainly will be better. But he's also, you know, we're fairly deep into his career here, and he's just not really been a lefty masher. Like, that hasn't been his pattern. He's struggled against a lot of changeups. off-speed pitches, the type of stuff he sees from southpaws. That doesn't mean he can't hit it, you know, in his best years he has, but he's not that guy, you know, like Teoscar Hernandez was, or, you know, Gurriel was, who every year they would reliably hit better when they had the platoon advantage. He's kind of been neutral at times, or even the other way. So he should be better.
Teoscar, there's a target right there.
Oh yeah. That'd be interesting. On the starting pitching thing, and we kind of touched on this, but he, you know, Atkins said you can never have enough pitching, as they say. So we have a contingency plan, but having the current group is a good place to be. So that's sort of the hint that they're not necessarily going to go get somebody else. And I think that you could argue that that's a defensible position. Like, the rotation has been good, and they have, yeah, a little bit more rotation depth than some teams, maybe from sort of 1 to 5, and a little bit less top end stuff behind, you know, Gausman, who's clearly a number one guy. You know, Berríos is, you know, we're talking well over 115 innings or so of, you know, ERA in the low threes too. So you can't be too unhappy with him in one of those bigger spots, even if the expected ERA says something different. But yeah, I don't know. That's a stronger suggestion than you might normally get from Atkins, that that's not necessarily the priority.
Yeah, I just think, yeah, I think that's probably true. And, you know, in terms of bodies, you feel a little bit better. You know, Bowden Francis pitched pretty well. You want Trevor Richards in a leverage, a high leverage spot at this point, which is kind of crazy, but, you know, he can soak up some innings, and I think they could, you know, hybrid their way through a bunch of starts if they really had to, you know, if Manoah goes sideways and if Ryu doesn't come back looking like the 2020 version or even the 2021 version. Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think he also mentioned something about like optionable guys, or that you got to pay a premium for that, which struck me as either, you know, be aware that we might pay a too high a price for an optionable guy, like we did with Mitch White, who was optionable for that 1 year and has now become a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you want to overpay for guys with a lot of term right now, because they just don't have as much ammunition as they used to have. And it's not like they're quote unquote running out of bullets completely. Like, there's enough guys in anyone's farm system to generally speaking get what you want to get done, but that hollows you out, and they are not of the mind that they want to hollow themselves out. That's not where they want to be.
Unless you can get someone who, you know, is going to, because he has term, can slide over to third base and replace Matt Chapman, or you know, can be one of your outfielders next year when Kiermaier goes, so, or be your DH next year.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense on the position player side, whereas for a starting pitcher,
no, term's going to be tough.
Yeah. I'd be surprised. Another Atkins quote, he said, what we don't want to do is subtract from the current roster. We believe in the group that's here. We believe they've earned that right. We can't say we absolutely won't, but we prefer not to. What's weird is I'm not sure what question prompted this answer, to be fair, I don't think anyone reasonable would suggest that they do want to subtract from the current roster, unless it's to service some, you know, bigger blockbuster, the type of blockbuster deal where you do have to trade guys from the roster because you need, you know, young MLB players or whatever to get it done. It's really hard for me to envision that this is a crossroads the Blue Jays would find themselves at.
Yeah, I mean, just like numbers wise, like, you know, Jordan Luplo, you're probably not going to be here after the trade deadline. But yeah, actual subtraction is tough. Like, it's not going to be Varsho, even though I could use seeing him, you know, some of his bats subtracted at least. You got PGO and Espinal. You know, if you can bring in two bats who you can make better use of than Varsho and one of those guys, or who you can play just about every day, one of those guys can be sacrificed, and they could be interesting trade chips, perhaps. You know, Biggio is kind of the rope is running out. It might be a guy who some other organization would have a little bit of interest in. Espinal too. But yeah, I think obviously the priority is not to devalue the big league roster. Yeah.
I mean, I guess in, again, like, I'm thinking blockbusters here. I guess in theory, you could trade one of the catchers and believe that you're getting stuff. But, you know, trading a catcher, you could argue, didn't go so well the first time. And I think you definitely, I don't know, in my opinion, you want to have both Jansen and Kirk hanging around. But in terms of, yeah, subtractions you could feasibly make and somehow upgrade the team in the present, maybe, but I just don't see it, which is just, that's why the quote stood out to me, because it was just hard for me to envision a scenario where they did make trades like that. Again, if they lost every single game between now and the trade deadline and they want to talk about Matt Chapman, maybe, but that's just, again, that's just such a far-fetched scenario that it was mainly people making annoying arguments about it when they were at their worst. Like, it's not.
Yes.
Last, Atkins, we certainly don't need significant upticks. You've seen just recently with some more timely hitting, which we know in some cases can be very much luck driven, but we can't fall back on that, of course. So we believe in this group so much that making it better, we have work to do. Hard work to do without some level of subtraction, but we do think there's a way to add a little offense to this team without having to subtract anyone. The thing that I found funny about this, which is, you know, it's a fairly generic jumble. It's just him specifically addressing the runners in scoring position thing again and making it clear that my opinion is that this is luck and largely nonsense, which I think is, generally speaking, a reasonable opinion. And B, even though this is my opinion, and I'm gonna double down on this opinion, even though I know that people don't like to hear it, I'm also gonna say, oh, but we can't just fall back on that. We're gonna do other stuff as well. We're not just doing we're sitting patiently and waiting for aggression to the mean things. It's a weird communication way of straddling the line. Like, you could just not bring up the luck thing and just say you're gonna do the stuff. Or you could double down and be like, yeah, this is what we believe and it's going to be okay. And you'd probably be right with that. But it just trying to do both felt a little odd.
Well, anytime you're looking at Ross quotes, you're going to feel a little odd. But yeah, I mean, I guess I get it. It's keeping the door. He's never found a door he doesn't want to keep open, right? It's
flexibility, baby.
Yeah. Oh, love that flexibility. It's, if we don't improve, that's because we don't think we need to improve. Just in case we actually don't do anything, you can't throw it back at me because I did say, you know, that's just luck and we're going to be better. I think that would be an insane path for them to take. It can be very difficult. There might not be a ton of sellers. There might be a lot of teams that are aggressive that are taking players away that they aren't able to get their hands on the best of them or just don't feel that the deals make sense. I wouldn't rule that out. I would kind of, I'm more inclined even, you know, more so even than a couple weeks ago to think that they might be more aggressive just because, yeah, it really is getting down to it. And I think probably that is just also an effect of the fact that the Rays have kind of come back to the pack. Well, we have absolutely, like, not kind of, they have come back to the pack.
In a big way, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, the division is in play, and that kind of changes everything, too. I mean, I don't think, the Orioles... they got a pretty good bullpen. They got some hitters.
Yeah, they're not. I don't know. They're not bad. I think it's fair to say they're not bad at this point. But it's also fair.
They don't terrify me though either. I think it's perfectly reasonable for the Jays to play six or seven games better than the Orioles over the last, you know, whatever it is, 100 or 60, 65 games or whatever it is.
Yeah, Baltimore's not a juggernaut by any means. It is interesting because right now, if the trade deadline is going to happen right now, the Blue Jays are in a weird spot where they don't need to be better to do the thing where they get in there and hope for the best, but they can't probably improve enough to be the team that gets in there and feels like, oh, we're better than the roll of the dice. That the Dodgers team that gets Manny Machado, you know what I mean? Like the team that thinks like, yes, we know the playoffs is kind of bullshit and kind of luck, but we're really good and we feel like we've got a chance to kind of buck the odds and do this thing because we're so damn good. So they're much closer to the, like, we hope we're that Braves team that won after the not great regular season, and there's just not enough they can do to get to that other level. What makes a difference is, like you say, if they feel the division is truly in play, if they get to the deadline And they are, I don't know, 4, 3.5 games. I think even 5 is a bit dicey, but whatever. If they feel like it can really strike the division, that is something to make meaningful upgrades for. If you're making upgrades for our team that is, you know, the 6th, 7th best team in the American League, or 5th, whatever you want to say, we're going to make it as a wild card, kind of whether we do anything or not, and we want to be slightly better, but we still won't be among the elite. Like, that's a weird place to really make a deadline push. And that's where it looked like they were, I don't know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And that might still be where they end up.
It might. Yeah, it absolutely might. But they'll also, I mean, I think we've seen them in the past. Yeah, not really. I mean, they've done rentals, but they don't necessarily like that. And they, and like, just going back to the guys that they have as free agents next year, you know, you can, you know, they got, you know, a year and a half out of Whit Merrifield. They got a year and a half out of Jose Barrios. You know, Dalton Varsho was clearly like that, brought in with a view to probably him playing center field next year, but, you know, just did it a bit early. Like, they could jump on some of their roster plans for the off season while, you know, also making their team better, and probably that feels like a thing that they might do. You know, I mean Witt's worked out really well, and we're running down Witt every week on this podcast. He just keeps playing really well.
Yeah, he's hitting bombs lately.
You know, I mean, good on him. God love him.
Maybe didn't need to go for the steal of third on Thursday after he'd shown that he was going to steal third, and then he tried to do it again in Gary Sanchez's face. Not ideal.
Apparently not. But you know, that could justify some bigger swings than we're maybe anticipating if we sort of think of it as they might in the, you know, think of it about, you know, roster building for next year in addition to this year.
Yeah, that is a way they can do it. But if they do it that way, that is very expensive. And so as a result, again, we're back in the area where we're talking about how much of the farm system they're eating. It's not impossible, but it is tough. It is. They're in a murkier position, I think, than they've been in recent years. I think in recent years, it's been clear. It's like, oh, this team, largely, for whatever reason, it's been this team has struggled a little bit in the first half. They're better than that. Let's give them the push they need. That's sort of been the pattern. And most of the moves they've made have been, you know, like, you know, the Barrios move, the Merrifield move. Like, these moves generally have worked. I looked at their rentals, you know, the Joaquin Benoit's and Scott Feldman's and Brad Hand's of the world. Like, it's been more misses than hits on that account. But if you look at their bullpen now, like, they don't, like, they might be floating around in those same kind of water. I don't know. No one wants to hear this, but it's like, oh, the Blue Jays might be acquiring that 7th or 6th reliever, not that 2nd or 3rd reliever, because their guys are really good. Like, entering Thursday, their top 6 guys, you know, the non-Mitch White, Jay Jackson part of the bullpen.
Jackson's been okay, too.
I mean, it's unfair to put those two guys together like they're the same thing. Jackson's been all right. But, you know, the top 6 guys that you care about and use in proper leverage spots, like, they've got a collective 3.07 ERA and 10.85 K per 9. Like, Pearson has the velocity. Swanson has been the guy they had been promised. So, I don't know. Like, it never hurts to get another great bullpen arm, but they're not going to be as desperate for bullpen arms as some of their contemporaries.
Well, I think that's probably true. And they got Chad Green, who, you know, I mean, Atkins wasn't going to be like, yeah, we're a little worried about it, but did say, you know, that they're very encouraged by his progress, and he's going to be getting into games again soon.
Before we get out of here, I did want to touch on a couple of the kind of goofier stories we've seen over the last week. And the first one has to be the Mariners shop selling and then rescinding the Blue Jays gear. Now, there's an element to this of, we don't really know what goes on in the Mariners shop normally. Like, this could have been happening a lot of the time, but it got out on social media. So that's, you know, that's how we know about it. There's this picture taken with the display of Blue Jays stuff in the shop. And then I think that's July 17th that happened. And basically the next day, there's a bunch of players who chime in on the Mariners who are like, come on, guys. And then it's gone from the shop. So we're talking about a couple day span based on, you know, reaction on social media. I will say that, you know, a team is there to make money. So they're trying to do something they believe will make money. But there's a couple elements to this. One, What Blue Jays fan is going to Seattle to buy their stuff there where it's more expensive with American dollars? Like, why? Like, I don't know what the market for a Blue Jays gear from a Blue, presumably they have it, they're bringing it, or they'll just buy it at home where it's cheaper. So that doesn't make any sense to me. And also, it, like, I don't know, the degree to which they can sell a couple shirts, a couple hats here probably isn't worth it for the alienating effect. I just can't see this being a good business move, even though apparently it's far from unprecedented around the league when, you know, the Yankees or Red Sox roll through town certain places and things like that.
Well, yeah, and that was, you know, some of the chatter on Twitter with the Blue Jays this week too, was that, you know, they used to do this, or that, you know, they would sell Yankees gear. I remember watching people, at least, you know, at least vendors. I'm not checking out the inventory of the team shop every time I go to a ball game, but and then there was that story, and I retweeted or brought it up that in 2008, I believe, maybe 2006. Must have been 2008, because I don't think I would have been blogging then, but because I wrote about it, and it was where they had emailed opposing fans and offered them tickets for like two Blue Jays games before they had gone on sale to the general public in Toronto, which was an outrage, and an outrage at the time. And it's kind of you understand, even though it's obviously very funny with the shoe being on the other foot, but you understand why Mariners fans get so irate about it. And because you're right, I think it is just a dumb business move. I mean, it's obviously a dumb business move because we're talking about the Blue Jays one, you know, almost 20 years later now, and or 15 or whatever it is. And yeah, I think like the alienation thing is such a huge thing. You shouldn't want those fans to be comfortable there, and it stinks. And it really speaks to just the organizational mindset, which is we're going to soak you for as much as we can. And I think Mariners fans already have that sense. You know, their payroll isn't what they think that it should be. They, you know, the success hasn't been what they think it should be, especially, you know, some of the players that they've had are over the years and the decades, you know, that they haven't been able to successfully build around in a market that has plenty of wealth, isn't necessarily super small, and absolutely, you know, should be done better by that organization, I think. And it's little things like this that can really spark stuff like that, I think, where people, you know, it's like, okay, that's a little too on the nose that you would cater to these other fans because you don't really care about making a baseball community around this team and making it, you know, something that is, you know, ingrained in the fabric of the city. It means a lot of things to people. You're just there to soak them.
Yeah, and we don't have to get too deep into sort of the economics of brick and mortar stores and e-commerce, partly because I'm not qualified to do that. But what I do know is that, like, these days people buy such a high percentage of their goods online that a lot of times when you have a physical store, it's basically just an advertising play. Like, it's a physical billboard you can walk through. And a team store in a ballpark is one of the more extreme versions of that. Like, it is a... Yeah, it's a mini propaganda hub within the ballpark, and that's exactly what it should be. And so when that goes, like, you know, sometimes you have goofy stuff you'll see in team stores that, you know, they're not selling a ton of, but they're just kind of having it there for brand awareness purposes. And they're like, it's supposed to be a fun little nook of the ballpark where you walk in and you don't necessarily want to spend, you know, 100 whatever bucks on a jersey it costs at the Jay store. Like, you, I don't really walk through there, but sometimes people just want to kind of walk and see what's up and see which players they're featuring and all that stuff. Like, it's part of the ballpark experience. So by having this rack of Blue Jay stuff that, again, like, God knows how much money it makes, like single thousands at most, maybe. Again, I don't want to...
I see some people in there. I see some people lined up.
No, I mean the Blue Jays one.
But the Blue Jays stuff, yeah.
The Blue Jays one in Seattle, I'm talking about. Like, how many thousands of dollars could it possibly be making them? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I definitely just from Twitter have seen, and I've seen it in the ballpark too. But you know, people get swept up in the ballpark experience. They're like, I do want to buy my favorite player's jersey right now, you know, so there's some...
Maybe, but it just seems to me that, like, having that piece of your ballpark tainted for what I assume is a very little amount of money in the grand... Like, for probably what you're paying one of your worst relievers to not pitch that day. type money, it strikes me as bizarre because
I think that's fair. Yes, there probably is some impulse buy stuff, but it's just because it's particularly the Blue Jays too, right? Like if they did this for everybody, if there was just a little shelf for everybody at the Mariners team shop, you know, I don't think it would pass. It would not be noticed. But they're just so irate about the Blue Jays and the whole experience and losing three home games and finding it miserable, which is all incredibly relatable, even as I find it extremely funny that they have to endure it. That, yeah, of course people are going to get weird about it. And the players aspect of it too, right? Like players bristling about it, which is a thing, and which also relates back to, you know, I said on the tweet, like, I don't remember if Blue Jays players at the time, you know, were upset about that in particular, but I know they definitely were upset about, you know, the some of the crowds in Toronto. And I think that an aspect of that was absolutely the fact that, you know, at the time, it would feel like a Yankees or a Red Sox home game. It was so annoying. And also I remember they would get mad, or they were mad about the Flashback Friday stuff, where like the team was really, you know, not selling them, not selling their brand, not selling their team, was trying to get people through the gate to you know, cheer for the old guys, and I think players at the time in the Vernon Wells, Aaron Hill era, were less than enthused about the attention paid to those guys and how that much of the marketing went on there. So they got their heads in that kind of space in terms of how the team operates sometimes. And I think they're probably right to not want to see Blue Jays jerseys sold. Like, why add to the number of Blue Jays jerseys in the stands when we're already the visiting team in our home ballpark?
Yeah, absolutely. The good news for Vernon Wells and Aaron Hill and the like is that about 40% of all sports Twitter now is just accounts tweeting pictures of old logos and saying, who do you think of when you see this logo? So that's really put the Aaron Hill and Vernon Wells back in circulation in the public consciousness.
Get them on your immaculate grids.
On a more positive note in terms of the fan experience, we have been, I'd say, closely covering the hot dog consumption beat on the podcast here. And on Tuesday night, the Toronto Blue Jays fan base absolutely obliterated its previous record with 75,173 hot dogs consumed. Now, context is important. That number might not mean anything to you. But what I will say is these are the previous Looney Dog numbers for the rest of the season. I'm just going to read them in order quickly. I'm not exactly, just the number in thousands, so we can save some time. 51,000, 61,000, 53,000, 49,000, 60,000, and then this huge one, 75,000. That is quite the jump. The tricky thing here is not actually the record for hot dogs per fan. It's 1.76 dogs per fan, and I feel like at some point I'd love to see them crack two here. 1.79 is the record. So it was more because a lot of people wanted to go to the game and see the Padres. So that's a positive. Lots of fans, yes. Lots of hot dogs. And what I will say, and again, we've mentioned Shai Davidi early in the podcast. He deserves credit here because he has been really doing the legwork on all this. And in 2022, they had his, according to his numbers, the average dogs per fan was 1.18. And in 2023, for the whole season, it has gone to 1.71, which is a massive increase. You know, we're talking thousands and thousands of hot dogs here, which for the people who are creating these hot dogs and serving these hot dogs, I imagine is an annoyance or a difficulty at the very least. But the fans in Toronto, they're getting better at this. And I'm excited to see where this goes. We're so early in the history of Looney Dogs, the recent history of Looney Dogs. I'm sure they just actually were a dollar at some point back in the day. But the 2020s version of Looney Dogs is kind of in its infancy, and it's impressive the way it's taking off.
Yeah, I hope they follow through with it. I mean, like the grim thought I have about it is like, okay, well, yeah, in 2021, the cost of a pack of hot dogs was not as much as it is now. So it just didn't seem like as good a deal. And now it's like, wow, a dollar for a hot dog. Like, do you know what butter costs now? Do you know what eggs cost? Like, it's like that's starting to sound like, Like, oh, I'm coming out on a pretty good deal. Not that it wasn't in 2021, but you know, the value add is just keeps on going up thanks to our little dystopia here. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I know it has been around, and maybe that plays into it. But it definitely is a thing that, like, non-baseball people, when I chat with them, they're like, $1 for $1 hot dogs. Like, this is it's like a minor league baseball novelty kind of thing. And you know, novelty is good. They're quite novel. It is remarkable. I think I'd like to see them. I'm with you. I'd like to see them get up to $2 per person. And I think we can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it once, and I topped out at 7, and I had purchased 8, and so the 8th one, oof, I physically could not put down. If I had known that 8th one would have put the entire ballpark at over 2 per person, like, if that had been the tipping point, I think I would have been able to do it, but...
Well, it still counted. They're only kind of sold. True, ones, yeah. So they don't ask you a survey that you exit.
They don't film you eating them all. Yeah, that's fair. So actually, that would have been fine. That's good to know. I'll never have to force myself to eat a loony dog. I do think one thing that you hit on there that's accurate is that this goes beyond baseball fans in a way that other promotions don't. Like, they do goofy promotions, but, you know, a bobblehead, for instance, a jersey, even like Kevin Gausman splitter jersey that doesn't even look like a real jersey, you still have to have that level of interest in the Jays or in baseball in general to really appreciate those items. And they do some other stuff, but this is the...
You didn't get a Chappie Couture shirt?
Yeah. There's some weird advertising around Chappie Couture, I'll say that. But this is one where people, I can see it actually drawing people to the ballpark who are, you know, either the most casual of the casual or, you know, barely interested in baseball at all. And normally a big league club doesn't have the luxury of doing things like that because they don't want to kind of be seen as a hack two-bit operation. You know what I mean? Like, they don't do some of the wild stuff you see in the minors. Because, you know, it's a $1 billion-plus organization, and there's some level of seriousness, I guess. And this sort of punctures through all of that in a way that I really appreciate.
Yeah, I like it. It's like a classic loss leader, you know. Costco has the hot dog. They got that rotisserie chicken. You know, gotta swipe one of those. I mean, I'm not downtown anymore, so I know about these things, but... all my chicken heads out there must...
All the chicken heads. No,
they're all nodding, I assure you.
All right, what a place to leave it. Thanks, everyone, for listening to episode 107. We will be back with you next week for episode 108. We appreciate any ratings, reviews, things of that nature that you give us, and we will talk to you shortly.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.